His ministry ripped up a lot. Yathā is Prabhupada's presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter, canto 7, chapter 5, text 14. Yathā brahmyatyayo brahman svayam akarsha sannidha. Tathā me bhidyate chetas chakrapane. Brahmanas, teachers, as iron attracted by a magnetic stone moves automatically toward the magnet, my consciousness, having been changed by his will, is attracted by Lord Vishnu, who carries a disc in his hand. Thus I have no independence. Prabhupada says, for iron to be attracted by a magnet is natural. Similarly, for all living entities to be attracted toward Krishna is natural. Therefore, the Lord's real name is Krishna, meaning he attracts everyone and everything. Typical examples of such attraction are found in Vrindavan, where everyone and everything and everyone is attracted by Krishna. The elderly persons like Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Devi, friends like Sudama, the other coward boys, the gopis like Srimati Radharani, and her associates, and even the birds, beasts, cows, and calves are attracted. The flowers and fruits in the gardens are attracted, the waves of the Jamuna are attracted, and the land, sky, trees, plants, animals, and all other living beings are attracted by Krishna. This is the natural situation of everything in Vrindavan. So, Krishna comes in various forms to attract us. And today is the appearance day of Lord Nrisimhadeva. Yathā brahmyatyayo. Ayo here means iron. As iron, brahmyate literally is made to move. Swayam, automatically, by itself. Ākārśa sannidhaya, in the proximity of a magnet. Tathā, similarly, me vidyate chetas, my chetas, my consciousness, vidyate, literally is sort of like separated or divided or, because he's speaking to his teachers, right? And so they want him simply to be loyal to the Kashipu curriculum. But, Dirty Politics 101. But actually, Prahlad is explaining why he can't simply do the program. And he says that my consciousness, my mind, is vidyate, it's been divided. Just like a magnet has moved. From Krishna, this happened because of Krishna, who is chakrapani, pani in his hand, he has a chakra in his hand. So it's very interesting because Hiranyakashipu, of course, was the sworn enemy of Vishnu. And Prahlad is so bold here, he not only says Vishnu, he says chakrapani, Vishnu has a chakra. So he might have expressed his love towards some more, let's say, less violent form of the Lord. But here, I mean, obviously this whole conversation is charged with political implications. Yes, he's saying that I'm consciously attracted to Chakrapani. So the Lord will defend me and you shouldn't mess with the Lord. Yadruchya, he says, Yadruchya, this simply happened. It's not something that it's not a decision I made. It just happened. That's just my state of consciousness. And he says, Brahmyati Swayam. An iron is just automatically moved. It just happens. He said, my consciousness is just drawn in that direction. It just happened. And the person person I'm attracted to is Chakrapani. So, Srinaruvacha etavat brahman brahmana yuktva, having spoken this much to the brahmana, Vidarama Mahamati, the great-minded one, Prahlad, stopped. He stopped speaking. Tam sannivharsya kupita sudino raja sevaka. So the king's servant, then, raja sevaka, so he was not, you know, he's a Brahmin, but he's a king's servant. That's also pointed out. This was not an independent, free-thinking Brahmin with, you know, sort of like Vedic tenure. This is just Raja Sevaka, just a servant of the king. So he was angry, he was enraged, and he became very angry, and Sannivartya, he was strongly, Prabhupada says, chastising very harshly Prahlad. He's also described as Sudina, as very wretched. So in very ways, it is Su here means very. Actually, Su in Sanskrit means well or good, but it also means very, just like in Spanish. You say like bien, enojado. So same thing in Sanskrit. So he's very wretched. First of all, his knowledge, of course, is somewhat pitiful. He doesn't really get it. And also he's very wretched because he's in big trouble. After all, he's working for an extremely violent person, Hiranyakashipu, and Hiranyakashipu entrusted his own son to this man. Now, if you know, like you think back to Europe or other countries where they're under kings, it's a very lucrative position when you're made the tutor of the king or the emperor's own child. It's a very prestigious, lucrative position, but also one which is very risky because anyone that gets near a violent, powerful man like that is, of course, you know, if you make a wrong move, something bad can happen to you. So it's like, it's very high stakes. And here, it turns out that Hiranyakashipu, this cosmic emperor, his own child, is a traitor, and is, you know, if the father finds out, which he will, it's going to be a very violent situation. So he's in a very miserable situation. So he says, Aniyatamare Vedram. Bring me a stick. So he's really angry. He actually is demonic. Which is interesting because he's a Brahmin. So much for the Varna system. And that's why there's so many verses in the Bhagavatam that say that, what is it? That without Krishna, Svanashtitasya dharmasya sansitiharitoshanam. What is it? Dharma svanashtitakpung sam. Dharma, nicely performed. Dharma svanashtitakpung sam. Vishvatsena katasu jatnopadhyayatiratim. For the dharma which does not produce, does not give rise to love for Krishna, shamaivi kevalam, is nothing but labor, nothing but tiresome labor. So here we find that the Brahmic position has been used for demonic purposes. Another example is Professor White, that stands with the Supracharya. So it means actually Professor White. Professor Blanco. It's who was, of course, the guru of the demons. And here this Brahman, so-called Brahman, is actually serving evil. I mean, Hiranyakashipu is about as evil as it gets, isn't it? And, well, anyway, Hiranyakashipu is terrorizing the universe. That's actually one of the chapters here. Hiranyakashipu terrorizes the universe. He's a terrorist. State terrorism. And this Brahman is faithfully serving them and wants to beat with a stick, or he's threatening to beat with a stick, a pure devotee because a pure devotee is a pure devotee. So obviously this Brahman is demonic. And he's a Brahman. So the Varna system without Krishna consciousness is see for yourself what it is. Yeah, it's not only tiresome labor, it's actually, it can be used to perpetuate evil. Any material thing can be used for Krishna or can be used for Maya. Now, Krishna has created the Varna system. Krishna has created the Varna system. That's a very old and venerable tradition, isn't it? To doze off in a Bhagavatam class. So,
Well, it's also an old tradition. To deny it. I never understood it really until I started giving Bhagavatam class. I never understood like how it is to just watch someone like eyes kind of like roll off, face out, or like just until you start getting it.
So, anyway, to the Bhagavatam, the Varna system. Krishna has created it. Krishna has created so many things that can be used for the wrong purpose that can be misused. People can be claiming to serve Krishna. Here, Hiranyakashipu and his servants, at least, are very explicit. They're against Krishna. Someone can actually claim to be serving Krishna and actually pursue demonic ends. So, And the real path of Krishna consciousness is so simple. It's simple and logical. And therefore Krishna says, one who knows me, tattvataha. So Narsingadeva, of course, is waiting in the wings here. And today is the day. In this incarnation of Krishna as Narahari, Narsingadeva is of course, very popular among the devotees as the Srinadeva, as a great protector. And of course, that's a story. It's quite a violent appearance of the Lord. Of course, violence and for the right cause. Hiranyakashipu was terrorizing the universe. And for example, in America, if you see the headlines that some big leader of Al-Qaeda or something was killed or like blown up, everyone, very few people lament. I mean, almost everyone thinks it's great. And if it turns out the person was blown up in some dramatic way, it's just no one flinches. And so Hiranyakashipu was doing extremely evil things. Of course, we know that ultimately it's Jai and Vijay. But still, Hiranyakashipu was terrorizing the universe, and then he tried to kill his own child. If you think about it, that's a 5-year-old child. 5-year-old child. He tried in so many ways to kill Prahlad and failed. And this thing was protecting him, and then this thing burst out of the pillar, as we all know. And killed Hiranyakashipu in a dramatic and unforgettable fashion. Even killing him, sort of operating on his intestines and everything. Because he was acting like a lion. And as Prabhupada always says, he bifurcated, ripped him in half. Which is quite definitive. I mean, the other reason, Hiranyakashipu had all these powers, so I suppose he might have been able to heal himself from a wound, but he was sort of broken beyond repair. On the lap of the Lord, of course, there are several very justly famous and instructive aspects of this. The fact that Hiranyakashipu thought he had avoided death, you know, very cleverly avoided death by material benedictions, and the point that no material benediction can save one. And so Krishna, of course, found a loophole in Hiranyakashipu's contract with Brahma. He thought he had an airtight contract, but there were loopholes. There are always loopholes, and death always comes. And then the reaction to harassing the Lord's pure devotee, the fact that Krishna protects his devotee. So this is Nrsingadev. Today's his appearance day. We are completely dependent on Krishna. There's that song, Krishna, 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 Rakshamam, protect me, Pahimam, guard me, or like, be my guardian, defend me. So, and, well, the song, we'll go over the song, that Namaste Narasinghaya, you understand that? Prahlad Ahlada. I mean, the word Prahlad means like delight, and then Prahlad and Ahlad. Synonyms. Daine, so Nrsingha is Daine, and we bow to the one who gave, to the giver. Daine means to the giver of Ahlada, bliss, to Prahlad. Prahlad, Ahlad, the Daine. And then Hiranyakashipu, Vaksha. Vaksha, of course, is chest. Hiranyakashipu, Vaksha, Shila, not Shila, by the way. But Shila, stone. Shila means stone, as in Govardhan Shila, not Shila. So the chest stone, we say like stone like chest, but essentially we tend to do the other way, like foot lotus, Chaturanga Dhruva. So Hiranyakashipur, Vaksha Shila Tanka. Tanka, of course, is chisel. Tanka, Shila, Tanka, Nakali in Sanskrit is actually a type of I don't know what it's called, like kind of like silvery shell or something, but shaped sort of like so here, so it refers to the nails. It's like having nails or like that. Hiranyakashipu, Vaksha, Shila, Tanka, Nakali. So when the Lord Nrsingadev, whose nails were a chisel on the stone chest of Hiranyakashipu, literally. Then, of course, he told Nrsingha, put a toe in Nrsingha, here is Nrsingha, there is Nrsingha, yato yato yami, wherever I go, the toe in Nrsingha, there is Nrsingha, but here in Nrsingha, Hridaye Nrsingha, outside Nrsingha, in the heart Nrsingha, Nrsingha Madin Sharanam Prapadye, I surrender to the original shelter, Nrsingha. Very beautiful. Then Tavakara Kamalavare. Kamalavare, to the excellent lotus of your hands, Kara's hand, Lord, the doer, from the verb to do, Kri, from which we have the essential word create. So the English word create. And Kri said, So Kara literally is the doer. That's the name for the hand. Tava. Tava, of course, is in Spanish, tuyo. So it means your hand are an excellent lotus. Tavakara kamalavare nakam. So on that hand did not come the nail. Adhuta singam. It's like a wonderful singa, like hook shape. Tavakara kamala varena kama dhuta singam dalita yiranya kashipu tanubringam. And of course, she ripped apart the wasp body of Hiranya Kashipu. So, Nrsingadev's deity. Any points, questions?
When did I had one point. Earlier this year, or maybe like last month, we were talking about the Lord's equality towards the devotees. And last year we happened to be going through Bhagavatam, like during the time period, in Vrindavan, so we had many discussions about the Lord's equality. Mm-hmm. Is the Lord actually equal to everyone? So we were saying that. So the topics came up like, okay, is Lord Vishnu equal towards everyone? But then as intimacy increases, he's not.
He's always equal. Of course he's always equal. Because there are just different levels. As our qualification increases, Krishna is more intimate. Krishna says that Samang Sarvuteshu, I'm equal to everyone. Name Deshosti, I'm not against anyone. Name Pi, I don't favor anyone. Yeva janti tumam vadya. However, those who worship me with devotion, mayi de. They are in me. Teju chapyam, and I am in them. But that is equality. It's not, I mean, inequality would mean that two people equally surrender to Krishna, but Krishna, out of his playful pastime, reciprocates one, not the other. Which, of course, he never does. Jijata mam prabhatante. These are absolute principles of Krishna's goodness. So I don't see any equality in Krishna. I mean, it's to be equal to everyone doesn't mean to treat everyone the same. It means to treat everyone fairly. You know, so if you have a store, someone comes into your store and gives you, say you're selling rubber balls for $5 each, and someone gives you $10, you give them two. If someone gives you $20, you give them four. You say, well, you gave more to that other person. Well, they paid you more. Well, that's what equality means. Equality means to treat everyone the same. But we don't behave equally. Actually, to treat unequal people equally is to be unequal. It's to favor one and to be against the other. So I think we have to remember that, because sometimes, to be honest, I mean, it's possible to get so caught up in kind of like these cute or cutesy, intimate ideas that you can kind of forget the basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And there is no intimate, special, esoteric, you can only read about it in this special book, fact about Krishna, which makes the Bhagavad Gita invalid. It's not that at a certain point, and actually in India, that's a popular idea among, fortunately, I think a small number, but there's definitely a group of people, and I've met them, who, in fact, I mean, some of them claiming to be Vaishnava Acharyas, who think they've like outgrown the Bhagavad Gita, or that at a certain point, it's only valid at a certain lower level. It's like Shankara, the Buddhist, where there are two levels of reality. And when you get to the higher one, the lower one collapses. And so, the Bhagavad Gita is true. It's always true. It's true at every level. Krishna is fair and equal. And that's part of his infinite goodness.
Guru Prabhu does a good job in his new Gita to explain that. The Gita actually reveals very much the intimate life of Krishna. really, like, there is higher and higher truths, you just depend on it.
Yeah, but the higher and higher truths follow the same basic principles. In other words, if I am, Krishna is good, so whatever level you're at with Krishna, he's still good and he's still fearing. It's not that you get to a certain level where Krishna doesn't say that I'm equal to everyone at lower levels. Krishna's always fair. He's always fair. And an example of that is when he disappeared from the gopis because they're getting a little proud, and so Krishna's just always fair. He always does what's best for us at any level. Even if you're, you know, gopi in the rasa dance, Krishna's still fair, and he still does what's best for you.
Are these gopis covered over by his yoga maya? Because pure devotees.
Yeah, you could say that. It's, yeah, it's just, you know, it's, yeah, whatever. The Krishna is just teaching, and the gopis are like Arjuna, they're just participating. And that's what's so wonderful about Krishna consciousness. It has this sublime, perfect simplicity that the highest truths still can be understood according to very beautiful, simple principles. And it's not that it just becomes a big mishmash at a certain point. You know, it doesn't become just this big mess. Well, Krishna's equal to everyone, but at this rasa stage, it starts to really, you know, like, it starts to bend a little bit, and at that rasa stage, it's a whole new ball game. There's a whole new set of rules. No, not really. What Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita is eternally true. Now, there are higher truths in this sense. Krishna is always fair and equal, but there are higher and higher levels of that fair reciprocity. There are higher and higher levels of it. And Krishna says that, Jeva Janti Tu Mam Bhakti. Krishna expresses the symmetry. Even when Krishna says that, he says that verse, I'm equal to everyone. However, those who worship me with devotion, they are me, and I am in them. So it's symmetrical. I am in them because they are in me. And they're reciprocating with me. Because I am in them, they are in me. So, again, what Krishna's expressing here is not favoritism, but the very opposite. He's expressing a perfectly symmetrical, fair reciprocation. What he's emphasizing is the symmetry of it. Not that this is a special case, he's emphasizing the opposite in the Bhagavad Gita. So it becomes a kind of vanity, like, okay, you guys down there can read the Bhagavad Gita, you know, I'm up here flying in the upper echelons of esoteric knowledge, and sure, you poor sadhakas can believe that Krishna is just equal to everyone, but it's like this vanity, this one-upsmanship, like, I'm on a higher level than you, and you poor slobs down there still reading the Gita, so it's really absurd. Krishna says it very clearly, and so obviously, how could Krishna not be fair? This is like Prabhupada said in Vrindavan, people forgot Krishna was God and Krishna didn't act like God, but when there was need, he was God. He is God. And when there's need, he's there. So, Krishna's equal. He's fair. I mean, how else would you want to reciprocate with someone? If you think about it, in a relationship, no matter how intimate, if it gets to a point where it's not reciprocal, then what is it? It just becomes like an unhealthy relationship. Why would anyone want to be in a relationship like that where it's not reciprocal? It would just be unhealthy. Yes?
We see that. I was just wondering if you could explain some connection between why renunciates often worship Lord Nrisimhadeva or have Lord Nrisimhadeva?
It's a good question. I don't know, maybe it's a fashion.
I mean, Prabhupada instituted, I was thinking because Prabhupada instituted the worship of Lord Nrisimhadeva specifically for our protection.
Yeah, but I mean, every morning I sing this Nrisimha prayer every morning. Mm-hmm. I think, I don't know, it's, I actually have no idea why, I mean, that's just so good. There are definitely, there are whatever. I don't want to, you know, engage in any facetious speculations, but sometimes sometimes we just refer to collective consciousness. I mean, sometimes sannyasis can have their own sort of community consciousness, and then some people start doing something, other people also do it. And not just blindly, but because, you know, it's a nice thing. It's not that it's just something which is harmful or even useless, but I don't think there is any special mandate for sannyasis. We should all. I don't know, I just love Prabhupada's simple program. It's just, it really hits the spot. You ever do Mangala Arati? Sing the prayers of Lord and sing the Dave. Actually, one time I was with Prabhupada when he was asked whether sannyasi should travel with deities, and Prabhupada said no. He said, Lord Chaitanya never traveled with deities. But, I mean, some sannyasis, it just, it works for them. It works for them. They like to have that. Because sometimes, I mean, I can understand that sometimes with that lifestyle, some of them especially maybe travel a lot, that they like to have that pancharatrik part of the track in place so their train can run nicely. Because sometimes it can, when you're traveling, so maybe some it just provides that dimension for them.
I was wondering about wearing Nrisimha kavacham because it's such a really powerful thing with the ashes and the yajna and all that.
I think the Maha Mantra is powerful.
Yeah, because if Krishna really protects his devotees, then what is the need for any other physical?
What is it?
It's just for smart.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not anti-coveter or anything, but in other words, if someone needs to do that or wants to do that, then who am I to object? But it's not that you have to do it or you should do it. It's Lord Nrisimhadeva, after all, is Krishna. Krishna is Nrisimhadeva. And Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. He's the source of all these incarnations. And so we meditate, because it's smart, we meditate upon Nrisimhadeva because it brings out the fact that Krishna is our protector. And there's one particular, although it's not only, I mean, Nrisimhadeva, of course, protected for love, but then there's many pastimes even in Vrindavan when Krishna protected the residents from so many demons. That's what he was doing all the time. Demons were attacking, not just Hiranya Kashyapu, all kinds of demons were attacking, and Krishna in Vrindavan was constantly protecting inhabitants from the forest fire, constantly protecting them. So, yeah, we do worship Nrisimhadeva because it is a special meditation and special relationship with the Lord that the devotees always relish. And then there is a sense in which Krishna is spiritual one-stop shopping. You know, you actually, and that's the point that Rupa Goswami made in the Bhakti Samrita Sindhu, in showing that Krishna is the original Godhead, that he has all the qualities. But all the qualities of the other incarnations are also found in Krishna because he's the source of all the incarnations.
The protection actually, I guess, it more refers to the consciousness and soul and not really the material body.
Yeah, sometimes devotees have, well, devotees, you know, do leave their bodies. And there have been cases of devotees who left their bodies in special ways. So, it's, if you look at Vrindavan Leela, when a demon came or forest fire broke out, devotees just cried out for Krishna because, I mean, at a certain level, you know, we don't want to engage Krishna in our service. However, it's just, you can't help it because it's certain things are just shocking. Certain things are shocking and you just cry out. It's just, you would be inhuman not to. It's just not. In other words, the whole mood of bhakti yoga is not to be like a super stoic sage just sits there and you could, like, you know, throw spears at him, he just doesn't flinch, and it's just not, it's not exactly our path, like, you know, super iceberg path. Devotees are personal, and certain things are just shocking in this world, and you can't, it just shocks your nervous system, you can't avoid just being shocked by it. Although, of course, the more we're Krishna conscious, then the more that even that shock becomes a devotional emotion, and it's not the same as material shock. It actually is spiritual and feels very different. It's on the spiritual platform. But to cry out to Krishna, it's just the greatest devotees cried out to Krishna. So we cry out to Krishna. In fact, look at that prayer, which Prabhupada put it, which Lord Chaitanya chanted, which is at the beginning of the Krishna book, Pahi Mam, protect me, guard me, Raksha Mam. So we have these prayers in our books. Devotees do ask for protection. I mean, it's very difficult for someone to just, like, voluntarily say, sure, go ahead and obliterate me, I'm into it. You know, it's, I mean, there's something weird about that. I think there's something healthy and natural about valuing your existence and about just crying out to Krishna. At the same time, when a devotee sees that this is Krishna's plan, then there is another mode where a devotee, you know, you can shift into another mode where you realize, it's like, what's his name, Jambavan, was fighting with Krishna for so many days and nights, and at a certain point he realized, uh-oh, I think this is my Lord. And so when you realize that you're fighting against Krishna, okay, I'm in a difficult situation, I'm crying out to Krishna for help, I want to change this, and then at a certain point I realize this is Krishna. This Krishna is doing this, then the devotee surrenders, okay, you know, go with the flow.
Right.
So then the Krishna wants to protect our body or our soul.
Yeah, the soul is, by Krishna's mercy, is invulnerable. But for us who are big fans of our bodies often, it can still get pretty scary. So, yeah, we just depend on Krishna for everything. And ultimately, I'll tell you what we're really asking Krishna to protect is our consciousness. Because if you think about it, someone could be in a materially difficult situation, but if you're in high consciousness, you really don't suffer. If you realize that I'm not the body and Krishna is really blessing me, this is all going to work out just fine. There's no real problem here. If you see that, then it's like everything's okay. So ultimately, what we're praying to Krishna for is to protect our consciousness. We're praying for Krishna to protect our consciousness. And that he always does. So even though someone, let's say you may hear that someone died in some way, but if it turns out that they were really in Krishna consciousness and they were just standing above that and looking down at the whole material situation, that person was not suffering in the bodily concept of life, but actually Krishna liberated that person from the situation. So, it really wasn't happening to them. Now, if I'm in the ahankara, egoism, which literally means egoism, If I'm in the ahankara stage, actually the Greek word ego is from Sanskrit, aham. Aham, ego, the H changes to a G. Like vahan, vagan. Anyway, so if in that ahankara or false ego or egoism, I'm identifying with the body. So there is a persona. There's not a real person who is the body, but there is a persona. There is the soul doing business as Joe Schmo. You know, so the point is, you are functioning psychologically as if you were the body. There is a, even though there's not an ontological reality, in other words, it's not you really aren't the body, but there's a psychological reality. Not reality in the sense that your psychology corresponds to an objective state of affairs in the world, but real in the sense that that's really your psychology at the moment. So in that sense, not from the correspondence point of view, that it corresponds to an objective state of affairs, but like if I believe that I've got a fatal illness and I start to, and I'm really in anxiety about it, that's a psychological reality. My state of mind, my belief does not correspond to a medical condition. However, I'm actually experiencing that. So in the sense that you really experience it, it's a psychological reality, not in the sense that it corresponds to something outside of your own belief. But there is a persona. There is a persona that is created. It's the soul doing business as the body. And that's why we suffer. That's what's so miserable about some of these situations. But if you are freed from, liberated from, protected from that bodily concept of life and stand above it, then it's like, what's the problem? Then you really have been protected. You really have been protected. Because Krishna, it's funny because we say, well, Krishna, protect me. Yes, he may not protect your false ego, but he will protect you. So in that sense, yes, Krishna always does protect his devotee. And that's ultimately what we're praying for, protect my consciousness. Because that's what I really am. That's all that ultimately matters, is consciousness. So, Nrisinga Deva, to use the Hindi expression, ki jai. That's Hindi, by the way. The key is you could say the passive jiyate Nrisinga Deva, or you could say Nrisinghaya.
Nrisinghaya.
Yeah.
When you say like Srila Prabhupada Jayakaha, is that Hindi or?
No, it's Guru Guranga Jayakaha. Jayakaha is the dual form for two. Guru Guranga Jayakaha.
So you say it singular.
Jaya.
Really?
Yeah, you just say Jaya Nrisingha.
Say,
but literally that means let Nrisingha conquer, be victorious, or which translate non-literally as all glories to.
And then they say something like pranam, like pranami.
Pranami? No. Pranamami?
Yes.
Well, that's Sanskrit. Or just namami. Which literally means I bow. Namaha just means a bow. So if you say, like, Namam Ishwaram, I bow to the Lord. And, but if you want to literally say ki jai, because ki means unto, in Sanskrit, I mean in Hindi, you put the prepositions after the noun. So, Krishna ki means unto Krishna. Just like say, there's another Hindi pronoun means with, like praying se kaho, say with love. Praying say with love. Yeah, the Pramadwani prayers are in Hindi. I mean, it's Sanskrit words, but it's embedded in Hindi. I guess, yeah. Well, more likely Vrindavan. Pyramid in North India. Ki means unto. Para, Spanish. So literally, Krishna ki jai, literally would be, well, would literally be Jaya Krishnaya. Which is Jaya Krishna, Jaya Sri Krishna, is Sanskrit. Doesn't mean like conquer.
But doesn't that have the same effect after a kirtan?
It's key. Yeah.
No, we are definitely attached to the keys. Yeah. Anything else? So, Lord Narsingadev Jai.